You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
We, as Republicans, as Democrats, as independents, as liberals and conservatives,
get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
If it was bad before today, I cannot believe how much worse it has gotten.
If we don't band together and protest, our democracy will be gone.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
And I'm freaked the frickin' frack out.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth, here is Maggie Dawn.
What is going on, everybody? Happy Tuesday. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you don't like to just listen, if you want to watch, you can always find Civic Media on our YouTube station. And, of course, at Maggie Dawn Show on Insta, the thing we used to call Twitter, and the Book of Faces. Check us out because you can see me and all of my fabulous guests today by watching us there. Of course, you're always welcome to listen on 540 AM WAUK in southeastern Wisconsin or any of Civic Media's amazing talk radio network affiliated stations. We got a packed show for you today. We're going to try to work in the breaking news. A bit of breaking news just before, as I was driving into the studio today, my friends, and I'm so glad I've got Gray Gunderson from Park Falls joining us to engage this discussion. It's not just your neck of the woods, Gray. It's my neck of the woods. It's everybody's neck. Maybe less woods, more neck. We continue to track the federal court's response to Donald Trump caring not a whit about Americans' due process rights. Due process isn't a thing that applies to some and not others. You either respect it for all or you respect it for none. And Donald Trump is demonstrating literally every day that he does not care about Americans and their due process rights. Gray, you've been talking about this quite a bit. I spent a long time yesterday going deep into the procedural detail of many of the cases that have been ongoing since the earliest invocation of the Alien Enemies Act to deport people, but that has really expanded in both number and potential impact and complexity since the Supreme Court in a 9-0 ruling on April 7th said, yep, people get due process. If you are standing on American jurisdictional land, you get due process. It doesn't matter who you are. That is central to our democracy. You got to give it to them. And since that time, Donald Trump and his administration have basically done everything in their power not to facilitate anybody exercising their due process rights or facilitating the return of Mr. Kilmer Abrego Garcia, whose due process rights were abused, not facilitating the due process rights of the people they already shipped into a legal no man's land for gosh knows how long, rotting away in an El Salvadorian concentration camp, done everything in their power to not follow the Constitution. Supreme Court had to intervene 1 a.m. on Saturday. We've been talking about it. I'm going to get into some of the detail on Justice Alito's dissent in that emergency order granted on Saturday. And just as I was coming in, then I'm going to throw it to you, Gray, for your take on this, some of your thoughts, what you're hearing in your neck of the woods. But just wanted to share the breaking news. A federal judge in Colorado, in a district court judge in Colorado, blocking removals under the Alien Enemies Act. This is U.S. District Court Judge Charlotte Sweeney issuing a temporary restraining order that prohibits the administration from using the law to deport non-citizens currently within the state of Colorado, further requiring that those non-citizens do get their due process rights. I believe it was that judge who said the administration has to give them at least 21 days. So what you've seen is this very sort of generalized ruling from the Supreme Court on April 7th, and then district court rulings with greater and greater specificity directing or seeming to direct the Trump administration about how they actually have to observe due process rights, because the Trump administration's last trick was, well, I'll get them out of any federal district court jurisdiction where one of these orders exists. I'll give them a notice that they're about to be deported in English, which they can't read, with no information about how to vindicate those due process rights, and then I'll disappear them. And that will maybe sort of comply with the Constitution. Judges and the Supreme Court saying that's not good enough. Yet another judge today being even more specific. You got to give them 21 days so that they can fully vindicate their due process rights. And by the way, everybody, these aren't full beyond a reasonable doubt trials. That's not the evidentiary standards that apply. This isn't some 2-week proceeding. It would not take that much to satisfy due process rights for these individuals in relative scope. So with that status check, Gray, I know you've been thinking and talking a lot about this. I wanted to give you a chance to weigh in, my friend.
Certainly. And I appreciate that opportunity. Thanks for having me back here 2 days in a row. I think I'm going to get a little bit spoiled here, Maggie. But
love having
one
you.
Thing that, oh, I love being here, but it may be lost on some of our viewers and listeners that I am in the red county. If you had to pick one red county, I'm there. I'm in the middle of it, and
You mean in the state of Wisconsin?
Like yes,
You're in deep red territory. Got it.
The quintessential red zone. That said, it's not as it's really difficult to explain my perspective on other people's perspective, of course, because I'm not them. But I think what my perspective is that I'm watching Donald Trump weaponize public opinion in a way that has been there for the taking, but he's just the first one to kind of step into this mantle. And what I mean by that is, credit to that caller we were talking to yesterday. I believe his name was Tom from Whitewater, because he was talking about how the Democrats have to step up and answer Donald Trump, because regardless of whether or not what he's doing is right, what he's doing has massive public support. And I wanted to, we ran out of time yesterday, but I wanted to credit him, because while I don't like that is true, it is 100% true. Donald Trump seems to be leveraging a wave of momentum through public opinion, which he is shaping using that putty knife I described yesterday, the false dichotomy. He's shaping public opinion so that he can drum up enough support that even if what he's doing is not quite correct, there's overwhelming public support, or at least enough that he can point to it and call it overwhelming when it's reported on his pet news cycle. And that's sort of the cycle. He says it, it gets reported. He can talk about how it's being reported and therefore has public support, which creates public support because he's created that attention. And by doing that, he can manufacture support for whatever thing he feels like manufacturing support for. He's just got to talk about it.
Can I just jump in here? One of the things that is true at a certain level, so I don't disagree with the point at all, but what I do think happens all of the time, and again, this is the Donald Trump creates public support by lying to people, right? Like, the factual predicates for the false choice are themselves lies, as is the false choice. What Gray and I are talking about here, of course, is the false choice between you can either be safe or have due process rights. You can't have both. And if you care about due process rights for someone who's here illegally, you don't care about American safety. That's a lie. I think that's a lie. I deeply care about American safety. And I know that American safety isn't just about one man or the border situation today. American safety fundamentally in this constitutional republic requires the respect of due process, right? Like, these are not separable values or ideals, yet the lies about Mr. Garcia, the lies about many of these people, that's the I'm going to scare you with this information. Those lies then begat the higher order lie that you can only have safety or due process, but not both. The higher order lie, of course, that there's not enough due process to go around. That if we give due process to someone else that really deserves it won't get it. The false scarcity lie. And last but not least, the lie that the world is zero sum, and that by respecting the due process rights of even someone who is here illegally, even someone who may have committed a crime, that all of a sudden that means, again, that you lose. It just, all of this are just layers and layers of lies to really create division and separation for people between some of the values that I think most Americans would have said 2 years ago they hold sacrosanct.
Oh, yeah. And that the justifying the hypocrisy is part of the model. Like, here's the three things I want to get done. And by the way, these are the three things I used to say Biden was evil for doing. And therefore, the fourth thing of these four things is the reason it's okay that I do it. And that's what I've really had to watch as the man on the ground here in the small town, is watching people who would have absolutely driven 1,000+ miles to go protest Joe Biden doing all the things that we're cheering Trump for doing now. It's like, how are you justifying that hypocrisy? Oh, well, if I step back and I watch it happen, I'm watching Donald Trump, and like, sure, in a vacuum, yeah, how is it my problem that there's all these illegal immigrants here? They don't deserve due process. Well, wait a second. Those two statements are a massive leap. How is it my problem? Okay, I get it. Sure, maybe the last president gave you more of a mess than you deserve to clean up. But that doesn't matter. That is no justification for eliminating due process. He's just trying to get people to agree with him, though, that because it wasn't him that did it in the first place, that he's okay with just throwing it all out. And I'm afraid to say.
Again, I also think there's so many falsehoods embedded there. For the record, and this is a verifiable fact, by this point in time in Joe Biden's presidency, he had deported more people than Donald Trump has, and he did it without violating their due process rights. Obama deported more people on a monthly basis than Donald Trump did during his first term. He had deported more people by this point in Obama's first and second terms than President Trump did, and they did that without violating people's due process rights. The immigration problem and the breakdown of our system, the lack of sufficient resources and personnel and immigration judges, that stuff has existed for 40 years. So even the factual predicates, they're like, this is a Joe Biden, that's a lie too. It wasn't a Joe Biden created problem, whether or not you think he made it worse, better, did not do enough, did just the right amount. It's not singularly attributable. Right. So all of it's a bunch of lies. By the way, I want to remind everybody, I have a handy rubric for analyzing political lies, Gray. Would you be surprised that I have a handy rubric for that? I will.
You maybe not.
Yeah, right? Get your pens and papers out. Not if you're driving, though. I'll give you that rubric. We'll dive into Alito's stupid, wrong, and nakedly partisan dissent in the Supreme Court's emergency orders. I'm going to continue the discussion with each and every one of you and my colleague, Gray Gunderson, right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to get your 2 cents, nickel, dime, or quarter in? That's 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It'll be the last day that you will be hearing me at this particular time, because tomorrow, Civic Media's talk radio lineup shifts, changes a wee bit. We got Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News, from 6 to 9. My colleague Jane Matinair with Matinair on Air, and Greg Bach from 9 to 11. The amazing, historically detailed, always intriguing Tom Hartman from 11 to 2. My good colleague Todd Alba with the Todd Alba Show, pursuing truth wherever it leads, from 2 to 4 p.m. And then, of course, myself rounding out the lineup from 4 to 6 p.m. You're still going to be able to find Nightlight with Pete Schwabba starting at 6. Today, We're going to have a live special guest host in the drive time slot this afternoon. You can find Matt Rothschild. He fills in for me sometimes. Love listening to Matt's takes on things. So keep it locked in and mark your calendars for that scheduled change tomorrow. Hope to hear and see you in the drive time. But back to current matters. Got Greg Gunderson, my colleague at Civic Media, who does a little segment with me, usually at least once a week, this week, twice a week, for what's going on in your neck of the woods. Gray joins me from Park Falls, Wisconsin. Gray, I promised everybody I would go through Judge Alito's dissent. His dissent was in the Supreme Court's emergency intervention in a case filed by the ACLU in the Southern District of Texas. When the ACLU found out that people were being loaded onto buses from the Bluebonnet detention facility in the Southern District, getting ready for deportation. They had been given perhaps less than a few hours notice of their deportation in a writing in English. Most of them didn't speak English. They were given no instructions on how to vindicate their due process rights. That, according to the Trump administration, all good to go. We handed you a piece of paper. You can't actually read it or understand it. You have no access to our legal system. But sure, that's due process. No problem. Supreme Court said otherwise. Except for Justice Alito, who wrote a dissent. I want to go through very briefly the bullet points in his bizarro two-page dissent, which reads like a boring law school exam. Which
yeah, sounds normal.
It sounds super normal.
Yeah, but he said, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'll tell you all what he said. That's Greg Gunderson, my colleague. But I'm going to help you ace your law school exam and be smarter than a Supreme Court justice. We're going to do this like rapid fire style because it's all dumb. Doesn't even take that much. Okay, bullet point one from Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito. Yeah, the guy with the upside down flags shilling for Donald Trump every chance he gets, taking donations and free trips everywhere. It wasn't just Justice Thomas. Here's what I say. Bullet one. It's not clear that the Supreme Court had jurisdiction. False. Lie. And he knows it. The federal rules of civil procedure and indeed U.S. 28 U.S.C. section 1254 authorizes review by certiorari by the Supreme Court as soon as a case is, quote, in a court of appeals, including, quote, before or after rendition of judgment or decree. Yes, the ACLU had filed an emergency petition with the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. So, yep, that was in a court of appeals. And yes, the Supreme Court therefore had jurisdiction. Justice Alito is no dummy. He's just a liar. So bullet one, big old liar, liar, pants on fire. Shall we continue? Because this is good fun. That is one. Bullet two. It is questionable whether the applicants complied with the general obligation to seek emergency injunctive relief in the district court before asking for such relief from an appellate court. Yes, they actually did do that. Justice Alito knows that. I don't even know what the hell he's talking about. In fact, the district court judges that they went to, there were two of them, issued orders saying, we can't help you here. What is he talking about? No one even knows. No one even knows. And by the way, this is all emergency relief because the Supreme Court wasn't specific enough when it made its prior ruling. So it's a problem of your own creation, Justice Alito. Liar. Let's go to bullet three. Except in the most extraordinary circumstances, an application for a stay will not be entertained by the Supreme Court unless the relief was requested first in the appropriate court. Didn't I just cover that? It is indeed an emergency. They were on buses going to the airport. The buses actually had to turn around. So, yeah, that's an emergency. And yes, they had already filed in the other courts, two trial courts. Had said no, the appeals court had yet to do anything. That's fair game for the Supreme Court. Bullet four, the only papers submitted to the Supreme Court were the papers from the applicants, meaning the ACLU, meaning oh, boo-hoo, the government didn't get a chance to respond in briefing papers. Justice Alito is the guy who is most famously in favor of all kinds of emergency intervention by the Supreme Court and has done it numerous times in favor of the Trump administration and has refused to give the opposing party a chance to respond. It's stupid. And he damn well knows that it is the very nature of the emergency here and in other analogous circumstances that permit the court to, in fact, step in to preserve the status quo even before both sides have fully briefed. That's why it's called emergency relief. Dumb lie. Bullet five, we're almost done. Everybody hang with me. The applicants were allegedly in imminent danger of removal, but the applicants provided little support for that allegation. What do you think? The government's going to be like, yeah, we were about to ship them off. They were lying. The guy lied on Friday in court, used some lawyerish isms. They were on buses to the airport. I don't know what more imminent or how much more imminent Alito could ever get. Maybe does the plane have to take off and then they can be like, oh, we can't do anything. Or does it have to land in El Salvador? Oh, we can't. When is it imminent enough? What a lie. Bullet six. I mean, we're running out of time. I just want to get these. I'm sorry, Ray. I want to get these in. I'm gonna bring you back after the bottom of the hour after we get all these in so I can get your take on this because I think I'm slaying these. Bullet six. The government, in a different matter, informed the district court in that case during a hearing yesterday that no such deportations were then planned to occur either yesterday, April 18th, or today, April 19th. So what he's saying is the government said they wouldn't do that. That's bullet six. Here's what the lawyer said. I am unaware of any flight scheduled for Friday. But he reserves the right for the government to conduct removals on Saturday. We're going to start back there in just a couple of minutes. Can you believe that? That's not at all what he said. I couldn't even get through all seven bullets. I'll do it on the flip side. We'll finish up this convo with Gray. All right, my hair is on fire. I was trying to keep it only to smoking today. But no, it's on fire. Keep it locked. My name's Maggie Dawn. I got Gray Gunderson with me. Dan Schaefer's coming up for the State Slate. Do you know Robin Voss hates mothers? You will know. Keep it locked. More on the Civic Media Radio Network next. I hope you all strapped on your oxygen during our last break. I know I did. Needed to catch my breath. After a quintessential Maggie Dawn rant in our last segment, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I got my fine colleague, Gray Gunderson from Park Falls. We're talking about the most recent legal wranglings that have happened related to Donald Trump's illegal use of the Alien Enemies Act to deport people without due process. Just as a reminder, just as a table setter here, we have yet to get a single ruling, let alone a ruling from the Supreme Court, about whether or not someone can invoke the Wartime Alien Enemies Act when we don't have a declared war. So that's to come. We haven't even gotten to like the real meat of the question. All of the court wrangling has been about, do people get due process? And if they do, how do they actually get due process? Does that mean a letter? A one-pager, two pagers in a language you don't speak, you know, maybe about 30 minutes to a day before you're going to get put on a plane to a foreign country where the United States will disclaim any power to ever bring you home and where you may languish for years and years without ever talking to your friends, family, loved ones, or a lawyer. Is that enough due process? The Supreme Court this weekend said no. Justice Samuel Alito objected to that decision for seven bullet points of reasons which are so stupid that a first-year law school student could tell that they're stupid. You're all going to be smarter than Justice Samuel Alito, at least better lawyers, after today's episode. So I went through five of those bullet points. I'm going to finish up the sixth. I want to get Gray's reactions to this. Then we're going to bring on my great colleague, Dan Schaefer, our political editor here for a little State Slate, because Robin Voss hates moms, and we got to talk about that. So with all of that as table setter for where we're at, let me return to bullet six. Bullet point six from Samuel Alito said, we, the Supreme Court, don't need to take any emergency action here in the middle of the night at 1 o'clock on Saturday morning. Because the government said on Friday afternoon that no such deportations were then planned to occur on Friday, April 18th, or today, Saturday, April 19th. Okay? Justice Alito says, the government told us no deportations would happen. Here's what the government lawyer actually said. And do you think Justice Alito can read and comprehend English pretty well? Can maybe parse language as well as any lawyer? You think it's possible that he could misconstrue the loopholes in what the lawyer actually said? No, Justice Samuel Alito is a liar. Here's what the lawyer actually said, according to multiple accounts of people who were actually listening to that hearing. The government lawyer, guy by the name of Ensign, depending on how you pronounce it, said he was, quote, unaware of any flights scheduled for Friday. And he specifically went to great pains to indicate that he was instructed to, quote, reserve the right for the government to conduct deportations on Saturday. So he didn't say anything like what Alito claimed he said. In fact, Alito's lying about the government lawyer's dissembling, lack of clarity, and hiding facts from a federal court judge. Does that sound familiar, like what happened in Judge Boasberg's courtroom? Make sure those planes turn around. Yes, Your Honor. Well, except the ones that are in the air. No, those are the ones I meant to turn around. Yeah, but we didn't really think so because you didn't put it on the dot. This is a problem. And here's what we now know. People, when this was happening, people were on a bus from the Blue Bonnet Detention Facility to the airport in Abilene, Texas. And reports are that they literally had the planes like gassing up so that at 12:01 a.m. on Saturday morning, or as soon as possible thereafter, they could zip these people over to El Salvador. They waited because they knew the Supreme Court had the case. Wow. And all of Justice Alito's points are basically along the lines of, it wasn't really an emergency. It clearly was. And the Supreme Court doesn't have jurisdiction. They did. That is what all of his points had to deal with. And then the last one is another jurisdictional, like technical point. Although this court provided class-wide relief, the district court never certified a class, and this court has never held that a class relief may be brought in a habeas corpus. I don't even need to read it. This is providing relief to a lot of people, and we've never agreed that you can bring a habeas proceeding on behalf of a lot of people as opposed to a single individual. Guess what Justice Alito has done in the past? Granted class-wide emergency relief to a huge group of people without the Supreme Court ever holding that you can actually have a class habeas case. He's done it before, ladies and gentlemen. He even wrote the majority opinion in one of those cases. I'm just saying, Justice Samuel Alito is a liar. He is a partisan hack that had an outcome that he wanted to reach. And so he was going to cram this case, this square peg, into that round hole to try to support Donald Trump. He is the opposite of what we should expect of every person that puts on a robe, which is apolitical, completely nonpartisan, objective, good faith readings of the law. And ladies and gentlemen, if you heard me say yesterday, I'm going to tell you what Justice Alito has in common with the liberal bloc of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Boom. That decision about Governor Tony Evers' line item veto to lock in 400 years of education funding, I applaud the impact of that. I support it. We have drained our public schools. I hate what Robin Voss and the GOP have done to public schools and each and every kid in this state. But that decision was wrong. Why is it wrong? Because it was partisan. It was outcome specific, meaning we want this to be the case, so we're going to figure out how to cram a round peg into a square hole. It destroys public trust in the courts, just like Samuel Alito's lies, which are more pernicious and worse than the tortured legal interpretations of the liberal bloc of the Supreme Court. But this is what happens when partisanship gets in the way of seeing the law clearly. Decisions that don't make any damn sense. And if we would all just be honest about it, it would serve us better. Gray, I'm sorry for the rant, but I needed everybody to hear all the stuff. Please, sir, your reactions.
Honestly, it just, it's, I slowly got a little more sad as you went on, simply because I'm beginning to understand, and maybe this is just part of turning 30, you know, your knees hurt, you don't sleep as well, and you begin to
realize
that— Wait
until you hit nearly 50.
the phrase occurred to me, and I think in these sentimental, dramatized, I'm a radio host more than I am a commentator of any kind, and it may show, but what occurred to me is that we are led and have been electing people, as a widespread issue, who know more about plausible deniability than about accountability. Mm. And I mean, sure, if you're a Supreme Court justice, yeah, you better know about plausible deniability, but that shouldn't be the basis by which you make all of your decisions. I mean, like, okay, we can say confidently that at the very least, Samuel Alito is married to someone who he claims strongly supported President Trump. You know, like the whole flag at half staff thing, like, okay, yeah, nice job insulating yourself from that one, but you're still married to that person. Like, oh, okay. It's something that I think a lot of people would agree. I think a lot of people who support Donald Trump would agree that leadership is not interested in leadership for the benefit of the led right now. But the moment you point out that Donald Trump is an example of that, it's just, nope, he's the champion for the people. He's the one we need to fix it all. Are you kidding me? He's running on Drain the Swamp, and he is the swamp thing. Am I the only one seeing this? It feeds into the ridiculousness.
It's a two-headed hedron, and it's Elon Musk and Donald Trump. When things are patently seem unreasonable or fly in the face of common sense, my first word of advice is ask an expert. Sometimes there's more than meets the eye. My second thing is, if the expert gives you a bunch of gobbledygook and can't make it make sense, then they're full of it. And it doesn't make sense, and you should trust your instinct. Gray, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much, my friend. I cannot wait to do this in the drive time slot with you next week, my friend.
It's been a very stressful pleasure.
Yes. Samesies. Thanks so much, folks. That's Gray Gunderson, Megan, out of Park Falls. Going to bring on Dan Schaefer, political editor here at Civic Media, because there is a pretty incredible story brewing here, much closer to home, with immediate direct impact on families with kids and families that are expecting. Dan, tell us more.
Yeah, so there's a big vote that happened today in the Wisconsin State Senate. There is a bill that has been circulating for several months now on extending Medicaid coverage for new moms. And now Wisconsin covers Medicaid coverage for new moms for 60 days. And this bill would extend that to 12 months. Now, this is what is the case in 48 of 50 states. Wisconsin is one of only two states that has not extended Medicaid coverage for new moms. That has largely been because Robin Voss has blocked this over and over again in the assembly. But today in the state Senate, it was a pretty remarkable vote because 32-1, the Wisconsin State Senate passed this bill that would extend postpartum care. And then in a press conference shortly after, quoting from a report from Hallie Claflin at Wisconsin Watch, Voss told reporters his position has not changed.
So let me get this straight. Wisconsin's position, let me be more clear. Robin Voss's position on new moms in the state of Wisconsin in the midst of a childcare crisis and pricing issue that we haven't seen in 20 years. Robin Voss's message to new moms and families with new babies is screw you. We could have a supportive leave for new mothers, not dads too, because I know that's really controversial for a lot of conservatives, but just the new moms, to go from 2 months to 12 months, which, just by way of comparison, Dan, you said 48 of 50 states have this, where it's at least 12 months. And I'll also say this. You go to every other analogous country with similar GDP that's a Western democracy, and it is at least 12 months. We are the standalone. I'm talking Australia, Japan, New Zealand, France, England, Germany. We're the only one that doesn't do this. And the GOP, led by Robin Voss in the state, has also blocked child care supports, expanding access to child care. So screw you, mom. Back to work. And if you can't afford child care, then I guess your family, you're just out of luck.
This is not a party that supports working families. This is it, plain and simple. It is not. And how often do you see the Republican-controlled Wisconsin state legislature pass something 32-1? Usually we have, you know, these votes that are just strictly along party lines. Republicans in the state Senate have come to their senses on this one. And the only person standing in the way is Robin Voss. There was a report from Wisconsin Watch last week that quoted Republican State Representative Patrick Snyder. And he said, quote, "If we can't pass something like this, I told the speaker I have a lot of heartburn about what we're doing in the legislature." So clearly, Republicans are divided on this. And I think this is one of those moments where if people want to make an impact and call your state representative and call Robin Voss's office specifically, the public pressure on this has clearly ramped up. It has clearly made an impact on the Senate side. As this goes to the Assembly, people can get involved and make their voices heard on this issue, because Wisconsin should not be in this position where we're one of only two states that does not support new moms like this.
Yeah, it's so shocking to me, Dan. And this is the second time Robin Voss has said, screw you, to moms. And just to some of our folks watching on YouTube, this isn't about welfare. This is about helping moms stay employed by giving reasonable leave so they don't have to be on healthcare, on welfare. It's about childcare for families so people don't end up bankrupt because they had a baby. Dan, I love you, man. I'm so sorry we didn't have time, but we will have more time when we're in the drive.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Some days the news is so complicated, my segments bleed into one another. I plead patience and thanks to all of you great listeners. Want to give a shout out to Terry from Cross Plains, making me laugh during our break. Terry responding to some great reporting from Dan Schaefer in his interview with me. That, of course, Robin Voss, I mean, why wouldn't you block the expansion of post-birth medical care under Medicaid for new moms? We just have it for 60 days. Basically, everybody in the Democratic Party have been supporting expansion to 12 months for a long time. We finally got most Republican senators in our state Senate to support it. They said yes, just voted today 32-1 to expand it from 2 months to 12 months. And Voss is saying he's going to block it in the Assembly. Terry had this to say: you know, Voss will eventually take credit for passing the bill. Kind of like Robin Voss was like, we got this great guy, Michael Gableman, for this baloney investigation. But that Michael Gableman, 2 years later, yeah, he should be fired. You know, a little Robin Voss flippity flop. I'm sure you're right, Terry. Thanks for participating. You can call or text in 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. But now I've got my great friend and colleague Jeremy Janine joining me. He is the creator and journalist with Urban Milwaukee. Jeremy, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am great, except for your listeners watching that I just screwed up my webcam. But this is a radio show. Let's fire away.
Yeah, let's just keep going. Jeremy, I know what you look like. So do all of our regular listeners and watchers. Let's dig in here. Pretty big news coming out of the City of Milwaukee Fire and Police Commission over the police use of drones. Tell us more, Jeremy.
The Milwaukee Police Department is going big on drones. They want to have 16 of them, and that includes 4 full-time employees using drones. Their vision is, okay, we can't chase cars with these, but after a reckless driving incident or a high-speed chase, someone gets out of the car, starts running. That's often where they lose the suspect. The idea is, okay, we'll be able to use a drone. It can go up to 45 miles per hour. It can catch them. They've already used them in a test kind of environment to cover protests that happened last year. They claim they're trying to keep people safe by looking for outside agitators that might enter the group and leave a group. And of great interest, actually, is that on St. Patrick's Day weekend, there's a massive bar crawl in Milwaukee, and they actually caught footage of an individual battering a police officer responding to an incident. And the reason they were able to do that is because when the call came in, the drone was able to get to the bar before the officer was. Not get inside the bar and belly up and order a Miller Lite, but to be outside the bar and monitoring the situation. There are, of course, as you hit on, concerns about privacy with these. What is all that footage going to do? How's it going to be stored, and where could it end up?
Yeah, this has been an issue of great debate in many other police departments across the country. And, you know, the old saw, Jeremy, for a long time, and which I continue to hear from a lot of people, is, well, if you don't do wrong things, you don't have to worry about the police monitoring you. Well, maybe you're not protesting for the right thing, right? Like, I start to extrapolate the use of artificial intelligence, facial recognition, the use of drone, right? Again, to be pretty basic about this, one of the most fundamental choices every citizen in any government has is how much privacy, how much of your civil rights do you give up for safety? And who gets to decide what the correct balance is? And this seems to be one of those instances. There are certainly what I'm going to call level one high profile events. RNC, DNC, for example, big political, you know, you got Kamala Harris, Donald Trump, the Secret Service, the use for these, you know, high threat situations. And is it a terrible thing that a police officer was battered by a drunken idiot? And should that person be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law? Yeah. But do you think there might have been like a few other probably hundreds of cameras available all along Water Street and wherever these bar crawls were that could have been used to potentially gain footage to identify the person who beat up this cop so we can prosecute them? What did the FP, where did the FPC land, Jeremy? Is it going ahead for sure? What did they have to say about it? Are there limitations, policies going to be put in place?
There's one limitation that I'm really looking at and following closely. The police department says there's no facial recognition technology on these drones, and that the manufacturer of the drones has no intention to add that feature. But the police department has also been very clear that they're looking at facial recognition technology, and they didn't specify where the limits of that might end. They said, if we do go that route, we'll come back with a new standard operating procedure. But all the video these drones capture is going to be stored alongside all the video that the body cameras capture. And then you kind of were hitting on that. What happens when all of a sudden, oh, I appeared in this video 6 months ago, the facial recognition saw me, someone else doesn't like what I'm doing. There's all these unintended consequences that facial recognition software could bring when you have massive amounts of video to mine against.
Yeah, that's the concern, is the volume and the lack of specificity. Drones capture so many images, you get into a bit of dystopic, and certainly the use of drone technology as well as other technologies to pinpoint people's locations based on cell phone usage and such. Not every police department has had the best track record of transparency and accountability when it comes to auditing the use of technology in surveillance and compliance with constitutional search and seizure requirements. I'm sure we'll continue this discussion. Thanks so much, Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee, for today's episode of Milwaukee as Microcosm. Is your police department using drones? You might want to ask them. Keep it locked, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. We got former Congressman Peter Barca coming up next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.